This meeting of the Resources Scrutiny Committee, packed full of interesting stuff. We'll start then with the minutes of the 7th of June. Talking to me. Right, okay.
I'm either going deaf or I'm not deaf.
I will try. I've had two teeth extracted over the last couple of days, and I think it's having an effect on my voice, because I should be louder, I should try harder. So good evening, everybody. Is that better? Right, okay. I'll try and speak louder. Item number one are the minutes of the 7th of June. Agree they're joint record members?
Yeah.
Good, thank you very much. Sign them. Right, the next one is apologies.
Thank you, Chairman. I've got apologies from Councillor Roycroft, who substituted this evening by Councillor Cross, and from Councillor Forden.
Right, thanks very much indeed. Number three, public question time.
That's nil, Chairman.
And Councillor Session, you have something. Councillor Hood has submitted an item for consideration. And would you like to introduce that, Councillor Hood?
Yes, Chairman. So I'm asking this committee that they discuss drafting and implementing a menopause policy on how to approach menopause in our workplace to support our staff. There are 3.5 million women over 50 in the workplace, which is a lot when you think that they're 50 plus and almost will certainly suffer menopause symptoms. I don't feel comfortable sitting here discussing this. I'm sure some of you don't feel comfortable me bringing this up. But I'm afraid that it's a natural necessity of something that happens within the workplace to women. Symptoms can sometimes last up to 10 years. And I have no idea what the absence reporting is here due to the menopause. But how many women will actually say, I'm not coming in today, I'm suffering menopause symptoms. And I would like to think that Stafford Borough Council Chairman would make it easier for women to remain in the workplace here, because so many of them actually leave the post because they can't cope with the symptoms that they're going through, and the relationships that break down with their colleagues because they're sometimes not inclined to say, I'm going through the menopause, I might be tetchy, I might be moody, I might be forgetful, and many suffer with insomnia. So that's the reason that I brought this to the committee. Thank you, Chairman.
Thanks very much, Councillor Hood. Any other comments, members? Yes, Councillor Green?
Joe, I think this is something that we do need to deal with in the council. The issue I have is I believe that the policy should be drafted through the Health and Wellbeing Committee, not here. Having drafted it, then it needs to come back here, because undoubtedly there will be resource implications to it, which we will need to scrutinise. So I'm supporting you, but I think I'd like you policy to come from the Health and Wellbeing, if you're happy with that.
If I may reply to that, Chairman, I did initially discuss this with Andrew Bailey, Democratic Services, months and months ago. This isn't something that I've suddenly brought because it's hitting the headlines, and I wanted it to be on that committee, but was advised that this was the best committee to bring it to. So I hope you don't think I'm
No.
But I appreciate your reply, Councillor James. Thank you.
Ian, you've got a point.
Yes, thank you, Chairman. Just to confirm, because the question was directed at policies affecting our staff, that falls wholly within the remit of the Resources Scrutiny Committee, to which our HR officers and cabinet member report to. So that's why it's been brought to this one.
That's right. Okay. Councillor Godfrey.
Thank you, Chair. Obviously, I think most people, or all people, support the sentiments of the council. Maybe we can have some updates as the council look into this and it comes back to this committee. And I take on board what the head of law says, that it should come to this committee, and we should look at it carefully and regularly.
Right. So, you mean, yes. Ian.
Just to say, Chairman, I know the head of HR is aware of the question. I think she had hoped to be here tonight and she was going to prepare a response. It's something that's happening nationally as well, so we've got HR policies. We need to make sure that they align with the national roles as well. So I think the head of HR did intend to give you some information how we could progress that, so maybe we can circulate that to the committee.
Yeah, I mean, at my meeting with officers, that was mentioned, and I was expecting the head of, or is it the interim head of HR to be here this evening, because I thought they may wish to have an input into where we are nationally and how we could then incorporate what you want. I think there's a real willingness to do that. Nobody's trying to delay it or damage it in any way. I think you've got 100% support, you know. And there are very few things you can get 100% support on. So well done on that. But I think we do need to hear from the interim head of HR as to how we're going to move forward, and precisely when. Because if we're waiting for changes in legislation, for example, on a national basis, then we want to make sure that we're aligned with that and we're dovetailing with that. So, can we have a report, I mean, perhaps to members of the committee, from the interim head of HR? So we don't have to wait for the next meeting or whatever. I think we need to move it on as soon as possible. Because to me, it seems like there's 100% support for this. So let's crack on. But if we have that report from head of HR.
I understand, Chairman, that there will be a written response made to the council session item. To all members of the committee, okay. And of course to Councillor Hood.
Right. Happy with that, Councillor Hood?
More than happy, quite satisfied.
Okay, thank you. And can I say, this is really an example of where we need diversity in the council, in all sorts of ways. I mean, I hadn't given this a thought, because I'm a mere man. And, it doesn't affect me. And there's a tendency for us to have different priorities. So that's why you need women on the council, so they actually bring a different perspective, a different view, a different attitude to bear. We wouldn't have had this if we didn't have a woman on the council. And we do have, thank goodness, lots of women on the council, and lots of female officers as well. Good. May we have more diversity. And I say that as a mere man. So happy with that then, Councillor Hood.
Yes.
We can move on then, members. Number 5, called in items.
There are none, Chair.
Number 6, members' items.
And there are none, Chair.
And now we come to the officer's report, the scrutiny of the waste contract. And
before you go into the detail, Chairman, might I ask what the policy is towards redaction? There's quite a bit of this report that is redacted. I can understand the basis of certain of it, because you don't want to publicise individual names and etc. And there could well be some commercial confidence issues. But the level of redaction is wider than I would have expected. And mm-hmm. I just wanted to understand what the policy is regarding that.
Right. Thank you very much. What I was going to do was to introduce our two speakers to begin with, and then we'll ask them perhaps to address that question as well. So, my pleasure to introduce two people from Veolia, Graeme Smith and Sean Donoghue. You know them, they were here last year. I wonder how many of you recognise the faces. I did. one scene never forgotten. So, Graeme and Sean are here to introduce the report, and then can I suggest, apart from doing the redaction one as part of things, that we hold any further questions until they've had a chance to give the report, and then we'll have the opportunity to ask all the questions we want. I think everyone happy with that?
Yeah.
Great. So over to you, gentlemen, if you'd like to come and introduce your report. And perhaps to deal with the redaction issue as well.
So with regards to the redaction issue, as far as we're concerned as a company, we're happy to unredact it as long as we can sort of maintain some confidentiality within the council environment. That's okay.
I think what we'd say is that If we have an unredacted piece of work, that would be confidential. I mean, we may be entitled to see some of this stuff, but we're not entitled to spread it round everybody. You know, these are confidential items if they've been redacted. Ian, you want to say something?
Yeah, just to confirm, Chairman, so it's a public agenda, so the report before you today is on the public agenda. So rather than keep any parts separate, confidential, we've not included anything that might be personal information or commercially sensitive or anything that would fall under your normal reasons. But yes, if members do want to see something, a table or anything that has been redacted, we can disclose it purely to members without putting it on the agenda.
And we'll also turn off the microphone at that point, so that nothing could slip out at all.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you'll need to discuss the confidential bits today, but if you want further information following the meeting, I'm sure you can provide it.
Right. So perhaps you could think about that.
There's one page here, Chairman, page 12, mm-hmm. which is entirely redacted. I'm just wondering how that is.
Yes. This is the structure, isn't it? Yes, the table has been redacted. And I'm just wondering, could we have had the structure without the names attached to them? We don't need names, that's not necessary, but the structure would have been quite useful. That's on page 13. Oh, on mine, it's 13. Section 3, resources.
I see.
There is one on page 12 as well. Yes, that's right.
I can understand if charges are commercially sensitive, but if I don't think it's helpful for it to be there, because it's not serving any purpose other than to prompt a question from me as to why it's written.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, I did attend. It's the joy of attending conferences or Zoom meetings on finance, local government finance. And someone asked the question, what happens if a contractor says, I can't let you have this information, it's confidential, it's commercially sensitive. And the chap said, but hang on, you are councillors, you are part of your council legally, and therefore you should be able to see that information, just as the officers can see that information, you should be able to see that information. You are not entitled to spread it round, and if you do, the sky could fall on your head, quite rightly so. But you should be able to see it on a confidential basis. I've always kept that in my mind. Because that's on number 13 as well, you see, the structure. So we've got two things, 12 and 13. But perhaps you could incorporate that into your chat. We better move.
So in terms of charges and the summary, which is page 12, don't have that information with me. We can provide that. 13, and I can give you a bit of information on resources and absence rates, and obviously at a later date we can provide more detail on that, with obviously the names and the details of the individuals redacted. So we'll work through our presentation as we did last year. So, first part is the key highlights from 2021 to 2022. So as we have done previous years and every year since Veolia have been in as part of the contract, we've continued our community engagement. We're connecting with a number of different stakeholders in the sense of Catherine House Hospice, we regularly do events for, including our Christmas tree collections. We always do a Easter egg collection and also Christmas hamper collections and selection boxes. All of these are things that are done by the actual workforce, by the drivers and loaders. They're the ones that drive this now. They come to us very early on asking us what we're doing each year and at each period throughout the year. I think over this year that we're talking about, 21-22, I think they raised over about £12,000 for local charities. Hearts and Hands is another one that's not mentioned on there. We do a lot of work. We did a collection for 3 food banks over the Christmas period and delivered those, which was very well received. We are the main sponsors and a category sponsor for the community awards and have been since we've been involved with that. So again, this year, again, we're doing the same. Obviously, we've had the impact of COVID. We had a very strong working relationship with the council at that point, working through each different scenario, working through almost daily where we were at, where we were with staff, what resources we had and we could provide. Evidence that good working relationship that we have. We're now in a sort of state and a position where we're looking to live with the effects of COVID. Although we're still monitoring it, we still record all the different types of absences, but we are seeing less absences. We're back on a level even keel in terms of COVID absences. Obviously, year two of the charged garden waste collections, I think we saw a slight increase in numbers on the second year, so that's always good. Depot staffing restructure, so I'll talk a little bit through the structure within the depot, which is one of the questions we've been asked in the redacted document. Obviously, we've got Sean as the general manager for Midlands and North, myself as a business manager at the depot based at Tollgate Drive. We have a contract performance manager who reports into me, and also a senior supervisor, a supervisor who do the sort of operational things for the day. They're the ones that get the trucks out, they deal with the guys, making sure we've got enough resource to put the service out there. We have 2 team leaders who also work operationally, and they're the ones that monitor miss collections, monitor the day-to-day performance of things, making sure that we've got those vehicles and those crews going out to pick all those bins up. So they do that. In terms of operational staff, 67 full-time employees, which can be slightly variable because of the garden waste, so when that drops off, out of that 67 there are 3 that are temporary staff, which do drop off at different times of the year, although because of the absence levels that we have, we do tend to try and keep those on, because if we haven't got those people in place, we then have to take on agency staff and we have to replace them with agency staff. So the 67 is pretty much full-time. And then we use about 10 to 12 agency staff over a period of time. So absentee rates, which was another part of the redacted document, is around about 5%. It does vary at different times. But one thing we make sure we do have is that we do have enough staff to cover those sicknesses and obviously holidays. Just touched on that in terms of sickness, we also have things like an in-house physio that we have in fortnightly. So if we do get employees that have got back problems or legs, knees, I think they pretty much look at everything that we've got. So that's something that we do in pretty much all of our depots, I'd say, Sean.
Yes.
Yeah, so most of them. So they come in fortnightly for us, which is another benefit to the workforce. Doesn't have to be work-related. It can be anything that they've got. So in terms of health and safety, we've established a health and safety committee in the last couple of years, which is made up of obviously office staff, management. We also include, we've got a couple of union representatives on there, and we also have drivers and loaders from the workforce. So it's about driving near misses, trying to improve our performance, looking into why incidents happened, what we can do about changing those. But we've also done things like reviewing the gloves that we use, reviewing uniforms and all different things, all the sorts of things that they need to bring to us. It gives us that forum where we can all have that open, honest conversation, which is working really well. So we've been working recently with housing providers. We do a lot of work in communal areas, obviously, with the council, trying to improve the recycling material that we get out of there, trying to improve those facilities for the housing association residents. So the next slide just gives us a few pictorial highlights. Obviously, top left, we've got the community awards. Then the picture to the right is one of our little residents that comes out every week that we're there for every crew, comes out, waves at the crew. He'll wave at them. We've given him gifts throughout the year when we see him. He gets chocolate, he gets all sorts. He's also been up to the depot as well to have a look around, to sit in the trucks. A lot of the things we can try and do to engage with the local community is something that we're really involved with. We've had a couple now, that a couple of young children that come up, and we're in the process of putting little packs together so that when they come out to say hello to the crews and wave at the crews have got a little pack there. There's a book in there for them and caps and different things. So that's going to be rolled out in the next few weeks. Bottom left is a picture of one of the Christmas collections that we had from one of the food banks. So that went to one of the food banks. There was three others. There's the Rising Brook Baptist Church, there's the food bank in Stone, and also Hearts and Hands that we helped in terms of a food bank. We also were involved in being filmed for BBC, where we were working on, or the company as such was working on, improving driver shortages. Just as a point, at Stafford we didn't have any issues with driver shortages, but because we have a regional office at Kingswood, they asked if they could use our yard, so we were live on BBC and they were talking about the different problems that we were having recruiting staff, trying to get more ladies involved in driving and working on the contracts as well. Just in terms of that, I think we've got four or five members of staff, from office staff to drivers and to loaders as well. We do have a mix of male and female loaders and drivers. And this was on the right-hand side where we've presented the cheque for the Christmas tree collection to Catherine House. So just the Christmas tree collections where people donate any kind of donation to Catherine House, then we collate all the information and we will actually then spend probably a week to 2 weeks going around all the properties within the within this Stafford Borough Council area and slightly wider sometimes to collect their Christmas trees. And this year it raised £7,100. So. Very worthwhile in doing. Scroll down there. So some of the key figures from the annual report: 43% fall in reported miscollections, 39% fall in containers not returned correctly, 50% reduction in number of accidents in the workforce, 31% fall in reported missed assisted collections. So an assisted collection is a highlighted property that residents have limited mobility or have other kinds of issues and they can't present their bins. So our crews will go up to the property, whether the bin be in the back garden, the side, at the top of the drive. They take the bin to the truck and then they'll return the bin back to where it should be at the property. So that's where our assisted mixed collections are. 7% reduction in collected weight and 27% reduction in average staff absence rates, which links in again to the absenteeism. So these are our reported miscollections. So as you can see, the green line at the bottom is the year 21-22. Pleased to see that it's at the bottom of all the other lines currently. One of the things that we've been working on within the depot is the consistency as well. I know you see the big spike on there. The big spike is when we did a reroute in 2018-19. So there was a lot of upheaval in terms of collection days and even week flips on some, so that's what that was for. But we review our key performance indicators and our service level agreements weekly within the depot. We review them fortnightly, where Sean gets involved, and then we review them monthly with the client as well. So we'll sit down and we do a performance review of our keep it KPIs and SLAs. Reported missed assisted collections. We've seen, again, it's the green line for 21-22. We have seen a blip at the start of the year and at the end of the year. Not really sure why these are. We constantly monitor them, but it's difficult to pick out sometimes. Sometimes the main problems with an assisted collection comes with the first time that they're assisted collected, because you're not sure where on the property it is. We're not sure if there's a gate. If there's a gate there and we get to the gate and the gate's a bit stiff, we don't want to push the gate and break the gate. So sometimes it does create a bit of an issue. But the crews are all training these things, and they know where they all are, literally. They do have an onboard device which will tell them where all their assisted collections are, but most of them do know them off memory anyway. Containers not returned correctly. Spiked again in February of 21-22. This is, I would say, probably one of our most frustrating problems. It seems very simple that these guys just put the bin back to where they get them from. And yes, I agree, but it's something that we're constantly monitoring. Any patterns we see in different crew members, we'll deal with those. But this is something that's been introduced again to these KPI reviews that we're doing, because we're not happy with the performance on that. So hopefully that should improve. One thing I wanted to mention just on the reported missed collections was that our current strike rate is 99.95%. So we do over 4 million collections a year over the three services. So a strike rate of 99.95% is pretty good, and it ranks quite high within Sean's region and also in with Veolia, other Veolia contracts that we have as well. So just a quick look at the weights collected from 21-22. So we've seen an increase in bulky collections, 63 ton increase, and then all the others you'll see have then reduced in the weight, in the total tonnages. Probably various reasons coming out of COVID, people not working from home, going back to work, different things. We can look at them and we can assume why these rates have changed, but we'll see. Garden waste has reduced by 2,486 tonnes. Both of those are the first and second year of garden waste. Fibre, obviously, a couple hundred tonne reduction there, and obviously DMR. But we've also seen a reduction in the refuse as well.
What's DMR, sorry?
Dry mixed recycling, so that's your glass cans, tins, that sort of thing.
Thank you.
Plastics. Yeah, we use a lot of acronyms. So in terms of our annual service improvement plan for 22-23, anti-contamination drive. So we're looking, as I said, at communal areas, trying to provide the right amount of containers that they should have, and the right mix of containers to get as much drive towards recycling as we can. One of the largest issues we have at the minute is recycling, which is put into bins within plastic carrier bags, but that's something we're currently working on. We're also doing some improvements in this year, 22-23, in our MRFs, which should hopefully increase the amount of material that we can recycle as well. So we should see a benefit for a while from that as well. The Environmental Act, we are sort of waiting on final decisions from that. So there's a number of things that may come out of that. I think we touch on it in the next slide, to be honest. But what we are looking at is the sustainability improvements that we can make at the depot and also in our collections. So we always try and be as efficient as we can with our collection rounds and our collection crews, and not having them going backwards and forwards to pick work up. We have introduced already last month a anti-idling campaign with our crews. So instead of them getting in the morning and having trucks running while they're doing vehicle checks, they can turn the vehicles off. If they're on break, they turn the vehicles off. We've also had fitted a device on the vehicle which will give us information about the idling, the harsh braking. It gives us information up front if there's a problem with the vehicle, so we can do preventative maintenance to it. Again, there's costs involved there, but also lifespan of the vehicles. Also in the depot, we're looking at the sustainability side of things. So we're looking at, we've already improved the lighting in the depot outside for LED lighting. We're looking internally now, we've recently completed an energy audit on the depot for another department of our company to come in and have a look and give us advice on what we can do to improve the sustainability. We are currently looking at putting some solar panels on top of buildings that we've got, so we're working closely with the council on that side of things, exploring different options in terms of grants and different things that we can get involved with. So in a bit more detail with our strategic improvement plan, as I've said there, solar panels, we're also doing some safety improvements in the depot, improving the vehicle parking that we have on site, protecting our drivers and loaders when they're moving around the yard with some Armco barriers, and looking at our pedestrian routes. We're always looking at ways we can improve the safety, so we're looking at those, and improvements to the office buildings. So that'll be in terms of lighting and safety in terms of getting in and out of buildings. Fire doors are going to be replaced and different things as well. So there's quite a bit of improvements in there. Service efficiencies. We have recently placed orders for a number of replacement vehicles. 9 vehicles will be replaced in February. I think it's probably tipped more than 1.8 million now with an extra vehicle that we've put in. So significant investment into the stock there. As I mentioned, we've got the technology installed, which again provides us with predictive maintenance, enhanced tachograph data. So although our vehicles, although they don't have to, they're not legally required to run on tachographs, we do run on tachographs because it gives us better clarity and more confidence for me as a transport manager that our guys are taking breaks, they are driving within the legal requirements as well. And obviously with the squirrel installs, it gives us improved vehicle availability and reduced fuel usage. Obviously everyone's aware of the cost of fuel at the moment. We do use a significant amount of fuel at the moment, so anything we can do to reduce that is helpful for us. Staff engagement is a thing that, as a company, Veolia is very engaged with, very bought into. We've been doing a lot of work with engagement and having honest and open conversations with our employees to find out what they really think. We've been improving. Our guys are very much at Stafford engaged with the stuff that we do within the community. We've recently held a social wellbeing day. We also mark different events throughout the years where we've been involved with Pride and different things. So we'll try and get together on days to make significant notes of what's going on in the country and around the world as well. So it gives us an opportunity to get to sit down, have a chat with these guys and spread that message a little bit more as well. So obviously continued investment in training and development. We have mentioned our workforce. Just in terms of our workforce, we have a very low turnover of staff, very low. We have our longest serving employee has been there for 45 years now. We've got 7 or 8 guys that initially started with the council and they've gone and they've GP'd through different contractors. We're aware that we have quite an aging workforce for that sort of demographic. So one of the things we're doing is including HGV driver training for the loaders that are employed with us. So instead of going out and recruiting more drivers, we're looking to invest in our loading staff that can then move on and progress into driving. So it's I think if you ask anyone on the Stafford contract, they are very engaged. We do a lot of thing and we involve them in it as well, which is the main part of it. So I think that's for us in terms of our presentation.
Okay.
I hopefully have covered some of the areas that you wanted to discuss in terms of the reduction, but anything we haven't got in there that we can provide, we will do.
Right, thank you very much indeed. Thank you. Now, members. Oh, yes, that's a good idea. Yeah, would you mind sitting up at the head of the table? So you're part of this committee. Yes, thank you, Council. Yeah, thank you for coming on.
Yeah.
club members. Now, the floor is yours for questions. Who'd like to ask the first question? Yep, Councillor James?
Yeah. Governments are expected to announce a new waste and resources strategy in the near future. What will the impact of this be, and have you had any information yet on it?
No. I think, most of our competitors, we have been kept in the dark, despite the fact that we do have lobbyists within the company. Obviously, always asking questions with regards to the local members of Parliament. Impact on the actual service, well, it remains to be seen what the final Environment Act contains, but obviously things such as food waste collection will need to be put into operation. But that's something that we predicted at the start of the contract and is part of our tender anyway. And then there are things like the can never remember the acronyms, the EPR and the DRS, of course, which is the extended producer responsibility and the deposit return schemes. Inevitably, if that comes into force, that will probably affect the amount of materials that we're taking from the curbside.
Councillor Whittington.
Thank you, Chair. This is almost a semi-political question as well, so I think it is quite right that we sort of mention our take on it. This proposed legislation coming forward for the Environment Bill and everything else does help us as a Borough Council with our sustainability commitment and carbon reduction, because I think somewhere I read or I was given the facts 4 or 5 years ago that somewhere in the region of the whole of Wembley Stadium could be filled with the waste food we use every day. Now, in terms of carbon sequestration and everything, as a farmer especially, I know how much effort and time and fertiliser and fuel, it's all carbon negative, goes into producing food, and then if that food's wasted, it's pretty horrendous. And I think that the good thing about having Veolia on board is that you guys are already collecting food waste, so it's not like a virgin company that we rely on. We have got some experience on this. Thank you.
Thanks, but it will obviously have quite an impact on the operations of the company, because it's a whole new ball game, really. And I presume you're planning for it.
Well, like John said, we've got quite extensive experience anyway in food waste collections. We know what productivity levels we need to achieve. We know how much it will reduce residual volumes by. So, yeah, that's something that we will be working on.
So, in fact, in other parts of the country, are you already dealing with this? Are you already having food collections?
Yes, we are, yeah. Ah, yeah, we recently rolled out a food waste service to Shropshire,
right.
Which went very successful. We do it all around the country. A number of places that already have food waste collections.
Right, so we're a bit behind the times here, and presumably government legislation is there to pull us up into the 21st century. You don't have to answer that, it's all right.
Yeah, to some extent you are behind the time, but you've got the benefit now of hindsight, because you know the lessons that have been learned with the rollout of food waste collections and other contracts that you've now got the benefit of. So.
but we're now playing catch up.
I mean, Chair, just to be a little bit sort of fair on this, in terms of anaerobic digestion, and you guys have backed this up, there's been some considerable problems. One of the problems was that they were actually leaking out methane, which was having a contrary effect. So I think that when we do it, we'll do it as we always do at Stafford.
We won't be creating methane. We have your guarantee on that.
Well, methane, we need methane, but we need to keep it inside the
in proportion. Yeah. Okay. Right. Thank you for that. Now, the next question. Members?
I think that's me, Chair.
Okay, Councillor Godfrey.
Thanks for the presentation. I think we'd be interested to ask what measures Veolia are taking to reduce its carbon footprint.
Veolia as a company.
And locally as well.
Well, obviously, Graham covered a lot of the local elements, such as the changes to the LED lighting, campaign to reduce vehicle idling, more efficient efficiency from collection and making sure
come down the electric route to begin with. And I remember coming last year and the gentleman of the council was mentioning the fact that asking the question about hydrogen. Well, hydrogen's very much a black for us at the moment. We're letting other people experiment with that while we're actually experimenting with the electric. So we've got two or three councils now who are committed to changing to electric vehicles. We've also got a couple of contracts whereby we've started to introduce HVO fuel, hydro-treated vegetable oil, mixed with diesel fuel. But what you've got to consider in all this, Veolia as a company, the actual transport element of what we do probably only represents single-digit percentages of our carbon emissions. The main carbon emissions for us come from things like the energy recovery facilities, where we're looking at different methodologies of carbon capture. But again, we've got the agenda to achieve net zero by 2030, and that's something that we're pressing upon everybody within the company at the moment. So, for example, within my region and the other five regions, everybody has to prepare an energy action plan whereby we commit to reduction in fuel usage, reduction in energy usage at our depot.
That's really interesting, Chair. Thank you very much for that. It's interesting you mentioned the date 2030 for carbon neutrality. Really good. It'd be nice if one council service did achieve 2030.
I think, because I believe our council service is 2040, isn't it?
It is indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah,
thank you, Chair. Just related to that question, just to assure the committee that during our contract meeting we've got regular agenda items well on the carbon footprint of Veolia, and we regularly discuss the actions that are taken. Veolia actually have a dedicated resource as a company to look at carbon output, and we actually had a chat in our contract meeting today about a new member of staff that's come on board from Veolia and how they might be able to help in the future as well. So it's something we regularly discuss with the contract.
Thanks, Lee. I mean, I'd like to congratulate Veolia for committing to a net zero date of 2030.
Councillor
Godfrey.
How are we finding the electric vehicles compared to diesel reliability and obviously the practicality of being plugged in?
It's taken us a while with manufacturers to get to where we are now. A lot of the problems that we've experienced, obviously, around battery life. We're finding out there's an improved battery life, but I suppose moving forward there's still that risk that, you know, there may be a need for battery replacements at some stage during the vehicle's life, which is obviously a very large part of the actual cost. So it's still very much a learning curve, but like I said, three contracts have committed to going fully electric, which is no mean cost, by the way, because the cost of a refuse collection vehicle roughly at the moment is about £200,000. The cost of an electric vehicle is over £400,000. But there are probably benefits to get moving forward in the future with regards to vehicle maintenance, because that's our biggest cost apart from fuel is the vehicle maintenance. And at this stage, there's less moving parts in an electric vehicle. We're not sure how those maintenance costs will stack up over the 8-year vehicle life.
Thank you. Next, yes, Councillor James, you want
to. You will remember I did ask the question, so I'll ask it again. What are you doing about hydrogen power? hydrogen fuel. given the cost of electricity going through the roof, one, two, the environmental damage being caused by the production of lithium for the batteries, and the yet undetermined cost of disposing of the batteries. Hydrogen is relatively cheap and free and readily available. Lithium is not.
Do you want to ask this
question?
No. Yeah. And I'll probably give you the same answer as I gave you last year. As I mentioned before, we decided not to go down the hydrogen route, but we will be monitoring how, for example, hydrogen is being used on buses in this country and throughout Europe. Buses are relatively sort of lightweight vehicles compared to the kind of vehicles that we're operating. So at this stage, we're more a sort of taking a back seat, seeing how that develops, and letting our competitors invest in that additional cost of.
Can I just put my two pence in on this? I think JCB within Staffordshire is a big proponent of trying to use hydrogen, and indeed Joe Bamford, who's the son of Tony Bamford, is driving the buses, so
yeah.
So there is a connection there. As with all of these things, anything to do with the environment is complicated. The more you go into it, the more complicated it gets. There is clean hydrogen and dirty hydrogen.
Yeah.
That's the first one. And then it's just the matter of if you get the mix wrong, it does tend to burn the tops off the pots on the engine. So it might be interesting to maintenance how hydrogen does. I've obviously run tractors which are heavy draft. Anything with heavy draft, it's really difficult to find a solution. Hydrogen probably is a solution, but there's more work to be done yet.
Yeah.
We have tried electric tractors, but the cable runs out after a while.
Don't you happy with that, Councillor James?
Oh yes, I'm happy.
Okay.
You've got to consider to answer the investments involved. And what you've also got to consider is we have a network of energy recovery facilities, all designed to provide the combined heat and power. So, for example, at the moment we are just introducing at our Selship facility in South East London the facility to use the energy coming from the energy recovery facility to charge Westminster City Council's fleet.
Mm.
So it's a more sort of coordinated approach that we're having.
Okay.
If I come next year, will you be asking me the same question?
I've no doubt you will.
Okay,
next question then, members. Yes, to the
three-part what is the current impact of inflation and the increased cost of living on the area? Also, given the forecast of inflation, what do you see the future impacts being? And also, do you have any sort of measures that safeguard you against them?
Do you
want to
answer that?
I think, well, from my point of view locally, we're very aware of the impact of the cost of living and different things. I mean, annually we review pay rises and payment levels with our crew and our workforce, who did very well this year. And it's a conversation we have every year with our contracts. And I think even our unions and our workforce agree that we're very fair in those discussions, because we are very fair in those awards that we give. And as a company, I think, yes, obviously we're affected by those, these inflations and the costs that go up. But in terms of the cost of the council, it's a set rate that we have. Obviously it's linked into inflation, but other than that, you know, where the price of fuel and all these different things go up, that doesn't come back to the council. That's something that we absorb as a company. In terms of going forward, that might be more for you, Sean.
But crystal ball. You've got a crystal ball. I mean, we're reading in the papers today about the fact that inflation could go up to 18%.
Mm.
Obviously, our biggest concern is our workforce, because that's our biggest cost. Our workforce represents probably 60% of our cost on this contract. Of course, we'd like to keep their wages linked to CPI increase, which is what we did, by the way, over that week. We gave them a two-year deal whereby this year they got a CPI-linked increase. Moving forward, it's something that's literally going to be fluid with the workforce. You can see all the strike action that's taking place in the country at the moment, because employers are suggesting that by increasing wages, they're exacerbating the situation with regards to the economy. We'll deal with the labour as we have to deal with it, obviously with as minimum risk to any potential action, because you know, we don't have many strikes within the area. Inevitably, we reach a conclusion which is probably not necessarily in our favour, but certainly sort of maintains our service provision. And then, of course, you've got the fuel. As a company, as you would imagine, we buy stocks well in advance. So where we can bulk fuel, such as here at Stafford, because we've already got paid for a store that's got 2 million litres of fuel at 10p more expensive. So it's really difficult to manage. But as Graham said, at the end of the day, it doesn't affect the value of this contract. The cost of the contract remains the same.
Yeah, you say that's linked to inflation. What time of year does that inflation base take place?
CPI.
No, the consumer price index rather than RPI. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I can understand you've said that you're taking a risk. You're the one who's taking the risk. But could you envisage a scenario, and this is a scenario we haven't had since the 1970s or early 80s. Could you envisage a scenario where you have to come back to the borough council and say, look, costs have gone up so much, unless we do something, we might actually be going bankrupt.
No, I couldn't really. At the end of the day, we've signed a legal contract. The only way we could vary that contract would be by mutual agreement, and that would be by service variation, or maybe if there's a change in law, if there's a dramatic change in law that which would impact our costs, then we would have to come to the council and say, look, under the contracts with this clause and the change in law, we're sort of providing you with that responsibility, or at least a shared responsibility. But no, at the end of the day, when we tender these contracts, we know where the risks lie, and we take the risks, particularly on things like fuel. Okay. And then the expectation is that the annual contract uplift will cover any increased costs. So.
Okay, well, thank you for that. Thank you. So the next question, members. Councillor Cross.
Safety summary. I know this is almost a 25% increase in your near misses. How do you manage your near misses? Can you explain why they've increased by almost 25%?
Well, they've increased by 25% because we want them to increase by 25%. We want them to increase. Near miss for us is a way of finding out potentially where someone could be hurt before they actually get hurt. So it's a preemptive look at. So guys, when they report a near miss, for example, may report a car driving on the pavement and they narrowly get missed by the car. So they'll report that. We have CCTV on our camera on our vehicles, which we'll then share with the police, and we'll share that information of the vehicle with the police. It might be that there's an area where they go where it's overgrown with hedges, or there's various different things that they'll report to us. So those near misses, then we can put something in place to try and mitigate any risk, or as limit as much as possible the risk of someone getting hurt. So the theory is the more near misses that we receive, the safer our guys are and the less accidents and incidents we should have. So that's why we encourage, part of setting up the health and safety meeting and the committee was to try and spread the word amongst the workforce to get them to put in near misses. So the more near misses we get, the better. And that's the way that we see it. I mean, once we get near misses, we try to solve them, obviously, with the council, with the police, with different people like that. Any authority that we can use, we work with those. But also internally, if we get some serious near misses, or even when we have accidents, we have a sort of review process. Some of the near misses that we have will be shared with other depots and through the municipal division and through all of Veolia if it's relevant. So we look at those sorts of things. We also have a review process on 7 days and 10 days. It tends to be more for accidents, but if we're in the fortunate position where we haven't got many accidents to review, we will review more serious near misses. Or if there's a very good near miss that we can all learn from, and that's reviewed from myself, our risk assurance team, Sean, Pascal, and as high up as it needs to go. And we get a good buy-in then, and it's a lot. Something that's changed within Veolia from previous companies I've worked for is it's not about blame. It really isn't about blaming an employee. It's about finding out what we can do to improve it. If it's that mindset that employee has taken a shortcut because it's a direct route, then how do we try and get around that? We've introduced things like safety trainers rather than boots, because that was some things that were highlighted and it increased more injuries in other areas of the body. So it's about learning from these events and trying to put things in place to try and stop our employees getting injured and making sure that they go home safe every day, which is our main aim at the end of the day.
I notice you've got two incidents. What do you class as an incident?
An incident, I think the ones we've had at Stafford, is someone stepping out of a vehicle, walking across a freshly laid, freshly developed grass area, and underneath there was a hole, and they actually slipped their ankle into there, so they twisted their ankle. We've had somewhere where there was a no lost time accident where someone's gone to move a bit, but it was too heavy, and they felt a twinge in the back. So they reported it to put in the name in the accident book, so in case there's any further issues, but there was no lost time. They weren't injured as such, but it's a way, again, they report those. It gives us a chance to investigate them and find out where things did or didn't go wrong, or where they could go wrong in the future, and for us to correct them.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Oh, thank you. Councillor Hart, yeah?
As you go on in the rural areas, this borough is a very big rural area, and you've got no footpaths, and single track lanes, cars coming a lot faster than they used to do. How do you cope with that?
It is a difficult one. There is a lot of country lanes. Most of the country lanes will use a vehicle as protection. So if we've got guys that are walking at the back, they will then obviously use that vehicle. They'll walk at the back of the vehicle and then they'll empty bins as they go down. Where we're driving down country lanes, we're hoping that a great big white 26-ton vehicle with flashing lights everywhere on it will actually make people aware before they come right on top of us. But the guys do have regular refresher training on to be aware of vehicles and other things that they'll come into contact with. And like I said before, where we've got evidence from our CCTV cameras, we report those to local police. So we've had a couple of those this year. Wherever we've reported them, we've provided the police with the footage, and they've been then to speak to the drivers and issued them with a warning. And if there's any further evidence that those drivers are not taking heed of that, then they take further action. So we work quite closely with the police on that.
Just quickly, as an example of a near miss incident, because we just think it's about wagons and being run over. I had a case where we had a small road on a housing trust estate, and there was actually foliage growing out, and that was causing the bin wagons to actually drive on the pavement. So that was multi-agency, but it wasn't for the saving of the earlier stuff, it was for anyone who's working on the pavement. So near misses are, as you said, important, but they're not just about health and safety of staff, it's about health and safety of the residents that they provide for as well.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Thank you very much. Have we got someone else to ask a question?
You mentioned about one lost time injury. What's the range of a lost time injury that you mentioned? One that was to do with a strain in the back or something.
So a range in terms of the injury?
Yeah, the scope of what classifies as a lost
scuttle,
really, isn't it?
Yeah, that's pretty much the ones that we have. Slips and trips, falls, they're always the ones that they're not too bad. We're fortunate at Stafford that we haven't had that many. They do tend to be slips and trips and falls. Further afield in other contracts, we have more serious incidents.
Manual handling is usually the highest percentage of accidents, but certainly here at Stafford, it's slips, trips and falls.
On the report, page 26, you talk about the combination of factors, including the first contract year of charge for garden waste collection service, with wastes were down 17.23%. Are you expecting that percentage to recover, or perhaps increase, or is it something that has stabilised at a lower level?
Garden waste is always a difficult one, mainly, as we'll notice, in the current climate, dependent on weather. So it can, some years we see a big spike, some years we don't. I think from the introduction of the garden waste service, yes, we've seen a reduction in the weights that we've collected, but I think that has more or less stabilised, just depending on that variation of the weather. You do see a bit of increase in the recent, I mean, we look at the subscriptions as much as anything else. We're increasing our subscriptions year on year, so that's always a good sign. But yeah, we tend to get a big busy part of the year before the summer period drops off, so we see a drop off there. But It does vary on and off, I don't know if you find that in other contracts as well.
Yeah, and obviously it depends upon the nature of the contract, whether it's rural, semi-rural or urban, but using this place as an example, comparing it to another semi-rural contract that I've got, what I found was that, for example, a drop in the actual weights moving to a subscription service, we probably average here around about somewhere between 12 and 15%. That is quite low. Using a comparison on another contract, we're looking at 18 to 20%. It is an urban contract. It can be even more than that, because obviously less people have it been, and more people, you're paying for the service. So I think as a contract, it's a bit of a shining light, this, when it comes to the green waste subscription service.
It's a very, very valuable service, Chairman, green waste, especially in rural areas where it's not easy to take stuff to a tip, etc., for the sheer weight of it. So it's something that really needs to be encouraged.
But of course, if I may say, heaven forfend, if the price of the green waste scheme were to go up during a period when there's a cost of living crisis, that could have an impact on demand, I should have thought. Because, I mean, that's a bit of discretionary spending. People are going to be thinking much more of their heating and food. Councillor Jones, then Councillor Godfrey. Because you had your hand up first.
No, I've spoken.
Okay. Oh, sorry. Councillor Godfrey and Councillor Hart. Because his hand was up before yours.
Thank you, Chair. I think it is worth mentioning the fact that we are in the middle of a cost of living crisis. It's going to get worse. And I have to say, I think the introduction of a charge for one of the services that you collect will have an impact on you, on your weights. Now, not just the weights here. Yes, they've reduced, but the green waste is reduced by far the most.
That's right.
Don't forget, you've got to consider a couple of the years were actually quite prolific for green waste during the COVID period.
I understand that, but the thing is that people are having this extra charge put on them. The only reassuring thing is, Chairman, I have to say, as anybody in this room knows, I do not like the green charge. I think it's a tax and a bill, but it's well rehearsed, I agree. The one thing I am reasonably pleased about, though, Chair, is the reassurance we've had from the last Cabinet member who stood up in Council and said there will be no increases in the brown bin charges. So that reassures me, and it's a certain extent. So it involves no increase in that charge coming in the next budget process.
Thank you for reminding us of that that pledge or that vow. Councillor Harp. I'll come to you.
To encourage people in the rural areas to compost more stuff. You see, all these brown bins, they've all got really great gardens, and whatever they put in them, can't be composted. I think they need to be encouraged to do more composting. If I didn't compost mine, I'd have to have three van lorries outside my car to eat off. So compost it. But a lot of people in the countryside don't do that, and I think it needs encouraging. In fact, it would do the gardens a lot to good as well.
Right, yes, Lee. And then I'll come to you, Councillor Wynne.
That is an area we promoted through communications in the past, and I think it is an area we need to push again. I think the committee may be aware that the County Council offer a discounted rate for compost bins, and in comparison to other authority areas, Stafford is the most well used of that discounted compost bin scheme. So it may well be that the slight reduction we have seen in some just from the garden waste could be a positive there, that more people are composting at home. So that offer is available to residents, and that I take on board the fact that I do feel we could push that a little bit more in the coming months.
I stand with the compost back.
Yep, right. Well, thanks, Lee. Councillor Winnington, and then Councillor Kemp.
Yep.
And then Councillor Lockwood.
Just very quickly, Chair, and I think it's important, while we're talking about the brown bins, there was a lot of conjecture at the start that there was going to be an increase in fly tipping. That hasn't happened. There was going to be an increase in burning. That hasn't happened. And also that there was going to be an increase in garden waste and the residual waste in the residual
that hasn't happened either. And I think if we now went to people and tried to take the service away, it's actually becoming one of those love services that people want now. And I will echo what the previous cabinet member said, £36 a year is not a massive amount.
It used to be just part of the general fund.
It's not pulling up, Chair, that's the main thing.
Okay. Hang on, I've got Councillor Kemp, if he's paying attention, and Councillor Loughran, and then Councillor Hood.
No, thank you, I can stand this a little bit. It's to the officers of the contract. The missed assistant collection, can you talk us through how that is a missed collection is dealt with? Because I had a lady that lives in my ward, Oxford Gardens, who complained to me bitterly that she was very put off when she tried to tell the people that she was disabled and she needed assistance, and she was continually being missed.
So in terms of the missed collection, I mean, once the property goes on to assisted collection, as I said before, there is a device in CAB which tells everyone where they are, where the missed collection, where the assisted collections are. And they have to actually confirm that off to say that they've done that bit. One of the two other things that I also mentioned that we do sometimes use agency staff. Although we will advise someone to go round to the back of a property to pull that bin out, they don't always find the bin and they'll come back and say it's not there. So we do miss some of those bins. Thankfully it's a low number of assisted that we missed, and also the assisted missed. That isn't helpful if it's your bin that we missed, and I understand that. So what we then do is we'll speak to the crews, we'll make sure we assure that, I mean, they understand exactly where the collection point is for each bin, and then obviously they have a reminder the next time their collection goes out. So on the same day in a fortnight's time, they'll have a piece of paper to say, don't forget number whatever in Oxford Gardens.
I know that you video a number of things, and people who didn't put their bins on the pavement, like myself on one occasion, who were complaining if it's not the pavement that he collected. But in actual fact, what bothered me when this lady spoke to me was she said the person she spoke to, a man, was very rude, and I tried to follow through the council and was told that only ladies answer the council. At this end, only ladies were dealing with the street scene and things like that. So I'm a bit concerned that, you know, do you record calls that are made in?
We don't at our depot record calls that come in. It depends whether the resident's gone through the contact centre or come directly from us. So when the calls go into the contact centre, I believe they're recorded, are they?
Yeah, they are, yeah. And as a part of our working relationship with Veolia, that is normally action very quickly. We've got an SLA where missed collections will typically go out within 24 hours and they're going to collect it again. And that is a concern, the story you've just described there, but you know, our experience is when we have complaints of that nature, then we normally resolve them fairly quickly. And if there are any complaints like that, then of course we can look at them as soon as possible.
Right. Okay, thanks very much, Councillor Kemp. Now I had Councillor Loughran and then Councillor Hood.
Okay, thank you, Chairman. My question actually is quite a double question, and we've already touched on recycling, and in particular the brown bin recycling. And what I would like to know, we've already touched on the fact that you are about to have a drive, or you're going to re-drive. I would like to hear more about what that drive is going to be. What are you going to do to try and encourage people to use their own composting facilities more? But again, the two gentlemen who gave us the presentation, very interesting, thank you very much. But you also talked about you are having a drive to reduce contamination in the recycling bin. I would like to hear, how are you going about your drive? What is your drive to reduce that contamination? And the reason I'm asking you is that, for example, you have talked about properties that are in multiple occupation, and I know that it can be very difficult, but in my area, buttons me about a lot of bins actually outside the area. And in those bins, people don't care. They put recyclables into the green bin and they also put other rubbish into the blue bin. How are you going to go about this drive that you keep talking about? I love hearing that there's going to be a drive to improve things, but I like to have detail as what the drive is. So anyway, I'm asking you about your drive. What are you going to do? And I'm also asking Lee, what is your drive to get people to either recycle more of their garden leaves or encourage people to do more in the way of collection? Could you also tell me, are there contamination rates in your garden recycling collections? Or, you know, has that all gone? Because at one time I think you were having contamination. Are you now collecting all kinds of things in your garden recycling bins?
Right. Thank you. Yes, Lee.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I think I answered part of that question. Probably for all, but I believe we've got zero contamination in the garden waste bins, and it's been like that for the whole year. So at the moment, I think last year, there was zero contamination in the garden waste bins themselves. And if I could answer the question about the communications that will be going out in the near future. So we'll soon be moving into year three of the Chargeable Garden Waste Service. And as well as our monthly contract meetings, we also have a monthly communications-focused meeting as well, where we discuss the type of things that need to go out into the public domain, like day changes for bank holidays, things like that. But also the type of things we're talking about where we are promoting composting. So in conjunction with the communications team at the council with Veolia, we'll be looking at the finer detail about over the coming months to promote things like the compost bin scheme alongside the Charge for Garden Waste Year 3 programme as well.
Okay.
Sorry, Chairman, how are you going to do that? Are you going to stand in the market square and give a leaflet? Are you going to put it on your website? That's what I want to know. How? What steps are you going to take to do that in moving? Not just tell me that you're going to promote it. How are you going to promote it? That's what I want to know. Are you going to work with partners? Are you going to work with schools? How are you going to do that? That's what you're not telling me.
Thank you, Councillor.
Yeah, Chair, thank you. It will be via the same methods that we've done previously. So typically that's via social media, it's via engaging with partners as well, like our housing providers as well, where we can inform them on the right ways to recycle. As we've discussed throughout the presentation, particularly through a very difficult times with COVID, etc., our KPIs have been very well successfully achieved. So the communications over the next few months will follow a very similar format to previous years, where it'll be a combination of social media, messages via call centre, pick up calls, and engage with partners, as we just discussed.
Just to pick on the point that what is our drive and what is the council's drive, I think they're joined up, they're a joint communication that we all work on towards. I mean, we put in a lot of information in our monthly meetings, and more often than that, in what types of contamination that we're experiencing. We've recently done a lot of work with schools. We've been promoting it within schools. We've worked with the schools in terms of classrooms. We've also gone through a lot of the schools, providing with the right containers for them to put into place in the schools, the right recycling, where we've actually diverted a lot of residual waste from the schools that they're producing into recycling. And we've done a lot of work with schools, because we obviously see that that's the starting point for all these people, that's the future. So they're on board. Those kids then take that back home to the parents, and they're now the ones that are telling their parents off for not doing it right. But like Lee says, we work on sort of social media things. We've got messages that we can put on the sides of vehicles, but more often than not, it's being out there and talking to people. We do quite a few different talks where we'll go to interested groups in different places, women's institutes and different things like that. We can have those conversations. We answer a lot of questions that they have about what they can recycle, where they can recycle. But yeah, it's getting out there and talking to people at the end of the day. But a lot of people get their information from social media now. We can pinpoint sort of by emails, text messages, and all those different things, the messages that we want to get out. and those are the messages that are the joined up messages that we work on together and put together as part of that comms meeting that we have.
Right, thank you very much.
Just
fairly briefly, Councillor, because we are taking an awful lot of time on this.
This is important.
I'm sure it is, that's why I'm letting you speak.
I'm talking now about a collaboration with other local authorities. Members of my family don't live in Stafford. They live in other areas. And I find whenever they're with me, they put the rubbish into my recycling bin because it gets collected in their area. So where they're living, things are being collected for recycling. They're not recycled in Stafford. And if I put them into my recycling bin, my bin might not be empty. So are you collaborating with other areas as well as within your own Stafford Borough area?
One of the main topics for conversation within the Environment Bill is the consistency of collections.
Yeah.
So that, because like you say, where you're in different parts of the country, you can recycle different things. So one of the things that we're looking at, along with government and everyone else, is trying to get that consistency. What we did as part of introducing the blue bin scheme was, although it felt like there was things coming out of that blue bin, it was because those things can't be recycled, we can't do anything with those, and so we were selective with the things that we had and we could accept to the curbside, and that is something that we're quite confident that will follow through into the Environment Bill. The actual collection method that we have, we had a lot of foresight before we put this in to build it in line with what is expected to come from that Environment Bill. So hopefully we are ahead of the game. I think some of that has been evidenced by the fact that other contracts locally to us and other councils are following suit with the same sort of collection measures that we're taking. So there's quite a breadth of contracts now that do have a similar or same collection recycling, because it's the way to optimise the recycling that we can do. We don't want everything being put in there because we can't do anything with it, and then it becomes contamination.
Very quickly, Chair, the blue bag scheme, cardboards, sounds like it should be recycled, but it's incredibly difficult. And that scheme alone has really worked for Stafford Borough. And as you say, apart from other boroughs where they've ordered the wrong size bag, it has been taken up on our example, so we are leading by example.
Okay, thank you. On one occasion,
there.
Hang on, I've got some other people who want to speak. Councillor Hood and then Councillor James.
Thank you. Thank you for your presentation. I can't help but be impressed. You very rarely have vacancies, but it's obvious that you do look after your workforce, so congratulations on that. I often wonder why, when I go around the different schools to the various open days, I always see a fire engine there. I never see a boom whack in there. I know the kids would absolutely love it, you know, and that's part. Councillor Loughran's been talking about drives. Maybe you could drive to school and have a drive there.
We've now put in place over the last 6 months a dedicated schools refuse and recycling service with vehicle, where that crew do work with the people within the school. Those schools do come out and watch those collections being taken place where they can. We've recently been at a school in Stone where we had the day there. We had Bentley there, and also we were alongside Bentley. And most of the fascination came from the bin truck rather than the Bentley that was sitting there. So that's really good to know. We've done a lot of work with schools, and we are promoting that more. This the dedicated resource that we've got there now. Will be livered up with a designed feature from the school, so that will be put in place.
So I have a resident who has assisted collection. You've missed her three times. First time I rang you direct, you were there within the hour and collected a bin. The second time I went through Becky Martin, and it was exactly the same thing. You were there straight away to help, and your guys were absolutely wonderful. I do have a gripe, and it wasn't my personal gripe, but we had a councillor who joined the town council and became obsessed with bins left out. And with the policy of residences, the empty buildings over the tops of shops, got more and more bins coming onto our high street in Stone and down past Churchway. And sometimes when there's been a collection, those bins are left out for days and days and days. That's probably nothing that you can do, but I think that the borough can. It is a hazard. We've got so many elderly people on mobility scooters, parents with pushchairs, people with dogs that have to negotiate, you know, and you've got to go into the road to get round the bins, or you take the bull by the horns and you actually wheel the bins into where you think they should be. So maybe that's something that we can look at. And we do get some of the lads and lasses who will just, once the bin's been emptied, they'll just fling the bin as near as they can to where they collect. You can't blame them, they're not in a rush.
Yeah, no, I fully understand that, and it's something that we deal with each and individual crew. But in terms of bins that are left on the streets, that is something that we have deal with. We do regularly site visit these places. We do work with the enforcement officer as well to try and get these people to remove the bins, especially the commercial side of it, where we've got commercial bins, especially on Christchurch Road. We've been there several times. We've spoken to them. Sometimes, in terms of individual domestic bins, it's hard to find out where those are. Again, that comes from the increase in domestic property in the town centres, which again is something that we're working with the council and looking at the planning side of it to see if more of the properties within the town centre are becoming domestic residents. So at the end of the day, there needs to be some provision there for where these bins are going to be kept, because as soon as people are moving into these properties, they're going to need bins and they're going to need to be left somewhere. And when we're noticing in a lot of these properties, they're not having a provision for where they can actually keep their bins and then put them out and take them back. So it's a constant battle, and it's a constant something we're working with the council to try and get involved in at an earlier stage, because it's something that both the council and us have raised, that is going to be an issue even more so going forward when more properties become more residential
and
in town.
I think it's up to us as planning committee to make sure that developers are providing adequate bin storage so we don't have them out on the street. Thank you very much.
Councillor James, and then Councillor Pardisi, I believe, also has a question.
Yeah, it's to do with plastics. Basically, I'm not convinced that everyone knows which plastics are recyclable and which are not. Perhaps next time we put a leaflet out, can we have a better list of what's recyclable and what isn't? And I only ask this because of that. Unfortunately, the guys threw my blown polythene containers back at us when actually they're recyclable.
Okay. Thanks very much indeed, Councillor James. Councillor Pardisi.
Thank you, Chair. I know you partially addressed this, but could you describe for us how you see your relationship with your unions and your workforce, please?
I think locally at Stafford Depot we have a very good, very, very good work relationship with our unions. In some respects, I'm fortunate, but in other respects, it's a relationship we've been working on for many years. And we obviously get the annual tit for tat over pay deals. But other than that, if there's an issue, they come to us or come to me and we try and find a resolution. They're quite happy to work with us. We're quite happy to work with them. So I think that relationship is gets stronger all the time. Some of the things we've been doing recently with it, we have regularly have appreciation days where we will just have ice creams or donuts that we'll put out with them, you know, just as a sign of appreciation, say thank you to the guys. And then the bigger events where we get together, and it gives them the opportunity to get together and have a chat and just mingle with each other, gives us a chance to interact with them and then have conversations with them and just find out what's going on with them. But we also have things like mental health first aiders in the depot as well that are there to help and look into it. You know, if they see someone's a bit quieter or if someone's been off sick for a while, they'll give them a contact, they'll give them a call. We keep in touch with them regularly if they're off sick. So I think we've always said it, being a good employer is actually being a good employer, not appearing to be it, and that's something we do. We have a lot of plans in place. We have employee assistance programs, which when we've spoken to people who've been in touch with our employee assistance program, they come back with nothing but glowing reports of how good it is and how helpful it's been. And I know from personal experience and from people within the workforce that has really helped them out. So I think we genuinely are a company that invests in their people. and we do the best for them, and they recognise that as well. So the guys will always come to us and explain what the issue is. They give us the opportunity to try and resolve it, and I think that is the strength of the relationship, really. You probably find that in a lot of other places.
Yeah, well, yeah, I do, but other places, the union relationship's more difficult. Obviously, the bigger the contract, and the more difficult it becomes, because obviously unity is power. But what I will say is, I think it's because of the level to which engagement is applied here on this contract by Graham and his team, effectively sort of takes me out of the equation, because when it comes to that annual fist fight about pay rises, I don't really need to. I get involved, but it's very. I find them so affable, whereas on my other contracts, the buck stops with me, basically. So we sound like we're painting a really positive picture, but it's the truth that we're telling you. It's we've got a good workforce, we've got an engaging workforce, and that certainly helps you when it comes to trade union relationships.
Right. Anything else, Councillor?
No.
Okay, thank you very much indeed. I think we've given that this topic a really good going over this evening. So can I say thank you very much indeed, first of all, to Graham and Sean for coming along this evening and for introducing the topic and then for answering all the questions and the comments and so on that flowed from it. I hope it hasn't been too exhausting for you. Our members seem to have got their teeth into it, which is good. That's what we should do as a scrutiny committee. So thank you very much indeed, members, for all your questions, all your comments on that. A very helpful evening, I think. We will talk about the redacted stuff and what may be sent on to members strictly on a confidential basis. Absolutely clear about that. Okay, so we'll be in touch on that issue. So thank you very much indeed. Thank you very much for coming along this evening. Enjoy the rest of the evening. And we've got all these lovely figures to look at now. Thanks again, gentlemen. Thank you. All right, okay, you've been transmuted to Councillor Smith. Okay, you've been promoted to Councillor Smith. Okay, so now...
Doing the training,
okay.
Nowhere near as good as Councillor Smith.
Ah, well. Now, we're on to agenda item 7B, and it's performance reporting for quarter one. Just the start of the issues. I'm going to take it page by page, and please stop me if there's anything you want to say on a particular page. So it's 41, 42, 43, 44. Councillor Pardesi?
Thank you, Chair. On 3.1.2, on reducing emissions from our own activities, we have a start date of April last year to replace the light fittings at the waterfront car park. So that started 16, 17 months ago. Can I ask how big a project it is?
So through you, Chair, one thing I did want to say to the committee was apologies for the vagueness in the end date that's been included in the performance report. These will be tightened up for quarter two going forward. In terms of that indicator, at the moment we are undergoing feasibility studies. As part of this work, it is a huge piece of work. We've done some of the floors at the waterfront, but there's still some to go, so it is quite a large project.
Want to come back on that, Councillor?
Sorry, Chair, maybe it was the way I read it. I thought we'd already started replacing the lighting.
Yeah, we have.
We have.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Fine, thanks very much indeed. Anything else on page 44? 45? 46? 47? This is now general fund budget monitoring.
Chairman.
I've got two. I was Councillor Godfrey and then Councillor Councillor Jones. Councillor Godfrey.
Thank you very much, Chair. Just getting to grips with my computer here. On page 48, which you were about to announce, we've got stocking variations again. And obviously, this comes into the favourable variance.
I haven't announced that, Councillor. We were on page 47. Did you have something on page 47, Councillor?
I said 48.
I've got 48.
Well, I've got 47. So I'm going to say 47, 48.
I shall start again, sir. Yeah, we're not stopping there. It's under favourable. So presumably that's a post that is not filled at the moment. To be in the position where we haven't got enough staff to provide services for the people.
Indeed.
Actually, through you, Chair, if I may, the fact that it shows that there's a variation because of the vacancy still shows that it's open and available, and therefore will be filled at some time. If there were no variation or no vacancies, that would suggest that we were removing the post.
I think, Chair, it goes off experience of the last 10 years of when there's some staffing variance, available variance, that post has either miraculously disappeared or reversed into somebody else's position. Just a note, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, we've got to keep an eye on these things, haven't we?
Mr. Chairman, if I can come back, the fact that there is a variance shows that there is a vacancy that is to be filled. If there are no variances or the post disappears, there wouldn't be variance, would there? That's surely QED.
If I can come back, Chair, obviously that is the initial report. It's ongoing reports that the variance may disappear, the post may disappear.
Right, thank you. I think the message from all this is eternal vigilance. And we shall keep that going. So that's. Sorry, Councillor Cross.
I was. Yes.
Oh, sorry. No, I'm sorry, I'm getting this mixed up. Councillor Jones, then Councillor Cross.
What's caught my attention is that on the environment portfolio, the combination of reasons on crematorium, which it indicates quite significant shortfalls, and I'm just wondering what action is proposed in relation to those.
In terms of the crematorium?
Well, are we going to... We're clearly losing quite a bit of money against budget on crematorium activities.
So through you, Chair, the crematorium at the moment is losing a reasonable amount of money on the utilities side of things, so this is obviously the ongoing budget pressures. So the budget was put in last year on the basis of assumed inflationary increases. Obviously, since then, inflation has escalated somewhat and is projected to continue. So that's why that crematorium variance is there. We've also had a slight on the flip side, we've also got reduced income because there are fewer cremations at the moment. Mm-hmm. So that's peaks and troughs to do with COVID and coming out the other side. So there's a variety of things going on that weren't necessarily understood at the time when we set the budget. So that's something that would have to be managed by the service.
Can I ask, Chairman, if we're thinking of increasing prices?
Well, yes, do ask. Are we thinking of increasing prices?
So the fees and charges will be being reviewed at the moment.
Our next meeting, I think, isn't it?
Fees and charges. The service is currently reviewing all fees and charges.
Right.
Across the council is reviewing fees and charges.
But I do hope that no one's suggesting that we ought to increase by some means the death rate so that we can benefit financially. I hope you weren't going to say there's an annual review of the death rate. There we are. Right. Right, next next page. Is there someone else? Someone else, hang on. Councillor Cross.
Thank you, Chairman. Yes, going back to the community portfolio, I noticed the South Set by increased utility costs. But the environment one, it doesn't mention it. I would have thought that with the crematorium operating as it does, there'd be a large increase there that, in costs on utilities.
As you said, the crematorium utilities are the first point, and then there are other, obviously other increases across other utilities within the environment budget. So we've pulled out the crematorium because obviously that's the biggest, most problematic area in terms of the environment portfolio, but there are general utility increases across the board. You'll find that on most portfolios there are utility.
Will it be an increase because we know the cost of utilities are going up again, so will that 12,000 be enough for us, or could it be
this is based on the quarter one, three chair, sorry. So at quarter two, this figure could increase. However, these utility forecasts are based on the current projections for a full year. It's based on the full, because we obviously put in a full year budget, and we've also had indicative figures from utility companies. So at the moment, these are projected overspends for the entire year. Obviously, things can move somewhat depending on future forecasts at the moment.
Thank you, Councillor Kenny.
Again, the environment portfolio has got a deficit of 71,000, which is offset by, I see, 43,000 in staffing variations. What is the vacancy there, the staffing vacancy there?
On the environment portfolio, restructure generally, so there's been a few bits of movement, but the main variance there is the interim head of service. So we had a retiree, the head of service, last financial year, and we have an interim head of service at the moment who's doing reduced hours against the full-time vacant post, so there has been a bit of a saving on there. So that's the majority, and there has been a few other vacancies in the environment.
Okay. Thanks very much. So that's page 48, 49, 50, 51, 52, 53, 54. Oh, sorry, Councillor Godfrey, then Councillor Pardisi.
Yeah, just a quick question, Chair. Can we have the last item explained to us?
This is page 54.
Page 54.
That's right. And audit risk resilience procure is at the bottom of that page. So it is not procure, it's procurement.
Yes.
It would be helpful, that might make it clearer if that was... Because, each of those is perfectly understandable, but put them together and they don't even mean anything. It's a sort of gestalt in reverse, really. Okay. Anything else? Councillor Pardisi.
Chair, the fixed penalty
antisocial
behaviour charges... I was just wondering, is that something new we're highlighting, and what sort of antisocial behaviour are we talking about?
Through you, Chair, we've got a variety of obviously income figures and charges, fees and charges. This is one where we've got a budget set for general miscellaneous income, and I think within that, antisocial behaviour forms part of that review. I'd have to come back to you on the detail in terms of exactly what those charges are for. It's just classed as an umbrella for antisocial behaviour, but I can come back to the committee on that.
Could you send that to all members of the committee? That would be helpful. Make a note of that.
Sorry,
catch racing. Are you going to give us the answer now?
Well, to my service, yes. Yeah. So it's income that we receive from fixed penalty notices that we dish out to people who've been very naughty, who've been committing antisocial behaviour. So, fixed penalty notices.
And how does this compare to other years? Is it getting worse or better?
So, nationally, antisocial behaviour has reduced, but we have seen a slight increase in the borough over the past few months. But it does tend to be seasonal. So, because we're in sort of a period of summer holidays, we do tend to see a general increase, and that's nationally, it's nothing out of the norm.
Would these also be fines for dropping litter or something? Does that come into antisocial behaviour?
No, that would come under environmental health. That would be a separate income.
Okay. So we get money from that as well?
We do.
Oh, no. That's it. That's fine. Anything else, Councillor Parker?
Yeah,
okay, you're happy with that. We don't need anything to all members. Are we agreed that Tracy's explained it now? We don't need any more information to all of us?
No.
Okay, fine. I mean, if we don't have to have emails, it's always better not to. Okay, so that's page 54, page 55, page 56. Right, final item is the work programme, and the meat of the thing is on page 60, which tells you, for example, what's coming on in the future. And you can see that resources scrutiny on the 10th of November is a fairly packed programme. It's fun, but it's packed. And of course, we've got the Freedom Leisure annual report, always a highlight of the year, together with various other things. So there's going to be a lot there. I presume it's going to be in the civic offices rather than in the gatehouse.
Presume so at this stage, Chair.
Ah, yeah. it may be better to be a neutral territory rather than somewhere else. And then of course, members, we've got the 16th of December. Oh no, the 3rd of January, and then the 28th of Feb. I'm hoping that we'll have some other items to populate those. I'm sure we shall. But yes, Councillor.
One thing, this might not be the right commissioner that Kingston could advise me of that. We changed the constitution last year with regards to planning and the membership of it, and no substitutes anymore, but due to any member could actually attend, given the training. Mm-hmm. Nobody's had that training, yeah? No, so.
The previous years, some of us have had the training. But I know what you're talking about. Some
there's no training in general.
Through the chair.
Through the chair.
You've asked
that.
Yeah. That's important. Yes. Yeah, that is important.
The fact that we've had the constitution changed and the training, we haven't had the training. It's not in general. We've not had the training to all members so that they can make those substitutions.
Well, actually, there should be training, shouldn't there, for those who are going on to planning. Ian.
It's something that I'm aware of and are looking to, you should hear soon, I think, they are looking to organise this year's training, and it will be an annual thing, so hopefully we'll catch up.
Yeah, Councillor Godfrey.
Just a general inquiry, Chair. I take it you will be taking the training yourself.
We'll see. Depends which way the wind is blowing. But there we are. Anyway, to change the subject, anyone else got any issues there? No, we've nothing on the work programme.
Before we finish, about the visitor reception.
Oh, yes, I've been reminded that there is something coming up on Monday, the 12th of September, that's agreeable to everybody. It's a grand visit, a guided visit indeed, of the Civic Centre reception area, which we are due to be held on the 1st of September. Now, that's been stymied because there's some work being carried out on that reception area this week, and the work has been pushed back, and it's now going to come about when we were supposed to be having the visit, so we can't have the visit then. So can we do it on the 12th of September? I'm sure you will want to go and have a look and see what's going on in reception, and talk to the people involved. So is everybody happy with Monday the 12th of September?
What time?
Sorry, it is at 2 p.m.
No, Chairman, I can't make it.
No, no. 2 p.m. We've got three who can't.
If you can arrange it for like something
like 18. You see, this is going to be like herding cats now, isn't it? You know, or eating soup with a fork.
You can do
that. What are we going to do? Put out a few?
Just bring in Tracy.
Oh, come on, Tracy, you've got to sort out this Gordian knot.
Through you, Chair. So, do members want to just come back with some times that would be convenient? The reason that we scheduled it for 2 is that we've got quite, you know, the staff group are in there. You could have had a conversation with them to talk to them about what they're doing. Happy to make it later on, but it would need to be 4:30. So, if you'd like to come back with some convenient times over.
Will you get in touch with me?
I'll get in touch. We'll find an alternative date.
Andrew will get in touch with people and all. I mean, he'll be able to do that in between his sort of midnight job at the Bank of England. You know,
yeah. We can do it in a couple of tranches if that would make it easier for members.
It could be a couple of sessions. But that creates more complexities. There'll be more issues. Never mind. I'll leave it to Andrew. I'm sure he'll be able to organise a visit, no problems. Thanks very much indeed, Tracy. So members, you'll be hearing from Andrew about that. And hopefully you will also be getting what was the redacted documents from Veolia. And Andrew and Lee, no doubt, will coordinate their efforts on that to ask Veolia to get those to us on a strictly confidential basis.
But it's information we need to be aware of.
Yeah, I agree. Right, well, can I say, if that's it, we're done. Thank you very much indeed, everyone. Thank you for spending so much time at this committee meeting. Thanks for all your comments and all your questions. Thank you.